Parsha Vayeshev details for us the drama in Yaakov Avinu's house and the struggle and the very intense feelings between Yosef and the Shiftekah and his brothers. And this tension culminates in the very, very challenging story of Yaakov Avinu sending Yosef to find out how the brothers are who are shepherding in the area of Shechem. And the brothers, seeing Yosef HaTzadik from afar, as our Mefarshim explained, our rabbis explained, convened a Beis Din, feeling that Yosef, Sforno mentions, was a Rodei, for somebody who's trying to take away from them the spiritual blessings of being all part of the continuation of the Jewish people, and they felt they had a right to kill Yosef. They throw Yosef into a pit. Later, he is taken out of the pit. He's sold, according to Chazal, a number of times until he reaches down to Egypt. The whole sale of Yosef HaTzadik and how could the brothers do this are excellent questions, but are not for our discussion today. I'd rather like to look at today one pasuk, and in fact, only one part of a pasuk, and really the words of Chazal, of Rashi on this pasuk. And I'd like to take this Rashi, this understanding of our rabbis, and try to be able to decipher it a bit deeper, and then even deeper, and then perhaps even deeper than that, to be able to really uncover some of the most fundamental aspects of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with us as the human beings, and really uncovers much of our experience in this world. And I think this is the beauty of learning, how in one pasuk, how in a certain detail, so much depth and breadth of what Yiddishkeit is about is alluded to. The pasuk tells us that right after they put Yosef in the pit, pasuk tells us in pasuk kafei, they sat to eat food, and they raised their eyes and they saw, behold, a caravan of Yishmaelites was coming from Gilad. Their camels were bearing spices, balsam, and lotus on the way to bring them down to Egypt. So the obvious question is, I understand why this caravan is of importance, why Yishmael is of importance, and why Yosef had specifically to be sold to him. But I need to understand, why does the Torah detail for me what this caravan was carrying? The Torah is very particular in all the details that it tells us. Obviously, it conveys for us a message. So Rashi tells us, why does source 2, the Torah, consider it important to tell us what they were carrying? This was to make known the reward given to Tzaddikim, says Rashi. The Yishmaelites usually carried foul-smelling substances like kerosene and tar. For Yosef, however, it was arranged that they carry spices so he would not suffer from a foul odor. And in fact, in source number 3, Rav Volbi, in his insights into Chumash, points out that the fact that the Torah not only mentions one spice, not two spices, but 3 spices, shows you the extent of the hashkocha, b'hashkocha nora, b'dikto kol kach gadol, that the Torah is telling you how these spices were chosen to accompany Yosef HaTzadik on his way down to Egypt. So let's take a look at this Rashi and raise a number of questions and try to understand this Rashi a little bit more deeply. Rashi is telling us that Yosef HaTzadik, on his way down to Egypt, Kadosh Baruch Hu is rewarding him by giving him these spices. So the first question we have to ask is, like, what type of reward is this? It's almost like loeg larash. It's almost like making fun of somebody. You know, here Yosef HaTzadik is being torn from his family. He has just been thrown into a pit. So the question is, he's having all these terrible things happen to him. Does it really make a difference if you're going to have sweet-smelling things or foul-smelling things? The whole experience is a terrible experience. What difference does it make what these Ishmaelites were carrying? And further, in source number 8, Rav Belsky asked in Ein Yisrael, one cannot help but notice the irony that Yosef was transported among sweet-smelling spices. Yosef had just narrowly escaped death at the hands of his brothers and was now being taken away from his home and family to a strange land, perhaps, never to see his loved ones again. It seems odd to think that a sweet fragrance would comfort or even distract a person who is undergoing such deep suffering. No convict being led to the gallows would even notice an exceptional aroma, occupied as he is with the hopelessness of his predicament. Indeed, the pleasant fragrance seems totally out of place for Yosef. And these are the two questions we need to understand. It's not, question one, the sweet fragrance is such like a minor detail when we're talking about these terrible things that are befalling Yosef. Like, who really cares about the sweet-smelling fragrances? And B, perhaps even a more basic question, is let's say the sweet-smelling fragrances are important, but is Yosef HaTzadik in a state of mind to even appreciate these fragrances? Like, why are you doing this to him? I mean, if somebody is in this, it's almost a depressive, despondent state, and you're going to say, let me, while you're walking to the gallows, let you smell the roses. Who cares about the roses? My mind's on the gallows. How are we to understand what this Rashi is about and what Chazal are trying to teach us? So I'd like to try to understand this Rashi, my friends, on a number of levels. I'd like to try to understand the first aspect of why this is important based on the Mefarshim. And then I'd like to take a look at two different approaches on Yosef HaTzadik's perspective of how is he able or is he able to appreciate this in the predicament that he's in. Let's start with understanding why it's important that Kadosh Baruch Hu even gave him the sweet-smelling spices in the first place. Very important piece. There's obviously a tremendous amount to say, and we're just taking not even the tip of the iceberg, we're not even basically touching the iceberg. In the famous Sefer of the Emunah and Hashgacha by Rav Chaim Friedlander, which has now been translated into English, he speaks about the whole concept of Hashgacha Pratis. And again, it's a topic deserving hours in its own right. And he quotes here from the Ramchal. He says, quoting from the Ramchal, however, each individual member of the human race, besides the connection to the class as a whole, and he speaks about beforehand how there's Hashgacha Klolis on different minim, on different classes, is supervised separately as an individual. And all of his deeds are judged separately, and decrees are made for him separately in accord with the details of his task. And on this, Rav Chaim Friedlander explains, aside from being governed by specific providence, humans are governed by general providence as well as vessels who help mankind or assist other individual people. But God also judges and supervises each person individually in light of his unique mission in life. Each person has his own task, which is unique to him, apart from our obligation to carry out the 613 mitzvot in the service of God. So that a specific area of God's glory, 5b, in creation will be revealed through him. In this way, each individual contributes his share to bring creation to perfection. And this is the yesod, a fundamental idea that we're all familiar with. The fact that I am created and the fact that every individual is created is because I have a job to bring godliness into this world in a specific, unique way that nobody else can. And that's why no one has been created like me from the beginning of creation to the end of creation. And this is true of every single human being who's created. So aside from the Taryag mitzvot that I need to keep and observe, I also need to ask myself this fundamental question of why did God put me down on this earth? Anyone and everyone has to keep the 613 mitzvot. But there's something unique about me. And obviously, very often we make the mistake of equating what my specific role in this world is with my profession. Sometimes the two go hand in hand, but not necessarily. It could be that a mother has a certain child, a special needs child. It could be a gifted child. It could be a parent. It could be a relationship with somebody. It was for this specific ability to bring about godliness in the way this child is treated, in the way this parent is treated, and being able to be a model for others of caring, of concern. These are areas of bringing, quote Shemayim, God's presence into this world. And each and every one of us in our life situations have a unique role in bringing about God's presence, what we call Kvod Shamayim, the glory of God, to this world. God therefore supervises each individual to enable and assist him in various ways to fulfill his mission, continuing in 5b, and to reward him for doing his duty. And this is what we call the life circumstances, whether it's the talents and abilities a person has, as well as the type of family one has and the type of community one lives in. All of these are the props on the stage that allow a person to be able to have a sense of what their mission is and to be able to carry out their mission. Or, conversely, to bring suffering upon him in order to arouse him to fulfill his duty or to punish him for neglecting his mission. This is man's special supervision as an individual. God judges each and every act separately, examining every detail of each deed. And decrees are made for him separately, meaning the decrees meted out to him are uniquely suited for him. These decrees are in accord with his unique mission and in accord with his deeds, whether they conformed or clashed with his task in the service of God. Because whatever happens to man, even the most minute event, is not incidental, but is made to measure for that individual and relates only to him, be it reward or be it punishment. All events are intended to mold the person and guide him to fulfill his mission. Even suffering is guidance, as we'll talk about at the end of Yirtzeh Hashem today. All this stems from the judgment and the Hashgacha Pratis on the person, which is based on his needs and his Avodas Hashem and on his merits. And this is the crucial point to understand. That life is not about, God forbid, some type of slot machine that you put in money and, you know, it's the luck of the drawer to see what comes out. No, chas v'shalom. Every single person's reward, as well as challenges, are there in order to enable the person to focus more specifically on why were they created in this world. And that's really what the concept of brachot are about. Brachot is from the concept of expansion, where God gives us more kelim, more of those things that we need in order to fulfill our potential when we are trying our hardest to do the best we can. And lack of bracha is when we don't use our kelim the way we need to. So God will take away these things because we're not utilizing them properly. And then we'll realize, hey, we need those things. Ah, we'll ask ourselves, why do we need these things? In order to bring about godliness in this world, and they will then, the struggle and the suffering and the challenges will then be able to reorient us to why we have been given these blessings, to be given these blessings again, to be able to utilize them properly. And this aspect of life is tailor-made to every single person, exactly where they are at. It is not a universal for the world, but every person is uniquely suited to where they are in life. With this in mind, we can understand that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu meets out punishment as well as reward, it is tailor-made down to the last iota exactly where this person is at. Again, Rav Belsky in Einei Yisrael in 7. Rashi's message reflects the fundamental principle of Torah faith. The Ribbono Shel Olam measures out his rewards and punishment to an infinitesimal degree of accuracy. The Rock, his work is perfect. Hatzur Pamim Paolo. Ki Kol Drachav Mishpat, for all his ways are justice. Kel Amunah, a faithful God and without iniquity. Vein Avel. Sadiq V'Yasharu, righteous and upright is he. Every person receives exactly the amount or reward or punishment that he deserves. No more and no less. There was a certain degree of punishment due to Yosef, but this was served through his enslavement in Mitzrayim. The suffering of foul odor on the journey itself was not part of the punishment, and therefore Hashem arranged for a pleasant one. And this is the idea that we learn from this, although we may not understand why this, why not that, and we'll talk more about today perhaps why this is so, on our limited understanding. But what we do learn from here, and what the Torah is telling us, is that the Yakulek HaTov points out in Source 6, based on Rameyer Rudman, Hakol shakul umadun min hashamayim. Everything is measured exactly, and there is no moving afilu b'malom neima me'ever l'kach. And this is our challenge in life. Whenever things are happening to us, we have to recognize that every single thing that is measured out for us is meted out exactly to the nth degree of what we need. When it comes to what they were carrying, he didn't deserve foul odor, so the Ishmaelites changed what they normally brought down and brought down something else. And this shows us to what extent HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets out to the nth degree exactly what happened. And what a lesson, my friends, for us. That when we go through, lo aleinu, a difficult time, we have to recognize and understand that everything that happens is a reason for it. And when something isn't happening, or something good happens, or something bad doesn't happen, we're able to say that this is the silver lining that Hashem has put into our lives. And obviously our challenge through all suffering is to be able to see the hand of Hashem. So often when tragedy strikes, we only see the negative hand of Hashem. We don't see the silver linings. We don't see the positive, which is Hashem's way of saying, I'm still there. I still love you. I still care about you. Brings to mind, a number of months ago, I had the occasion to bring a woman down to a number of times to take her to the hospital with a year and a half old little girl who was suffering from cancer, lo aleinu, very, very serious. And at one time, driving her down, just trying to strike up conversation, someone who came from the Kiryah, which is the most religious section, really, of Ramat, of Beit Shemesh area, I said to her, Betach ze ma'ot kashe b'shilech. Obviously, this is very difficult for you. And she looked at me incredulously and she says, Mapito, what are you talking about? And then the rest of the conversation, she went on to tell me how there was so much chesed of Hashem. She said her daughter got chicken pox and it went away 2 days before the first treatment was supposed to start. She said to me, do you see the chesed of Hashem, the kindness of Hashem, that we didn't have to put off the first treatment because the chicken pox stopped right in time? Now, I don't know about you, my friends, but my reaction would have been, can you imagine this kid, Lo aleinu, is suffering from cancer and now God gives her chicken pox too? My gosh! But that's not the way she looked at it. The chicken pox stopped right when it was supposed to. She was able to see God's beautiful hand here. And again, we don't understand, and we'll talk about this more in 2 weeks of Yirtzeh Hashem in the response to the tragedy in India. We don't understand why Hashem does these things, and we will never understand. We have other questions to ask ourselves, which we deal with in that shiur in Yirtzeh Hashem. But we do have to understand that everything that happens has to be understood as a message, has to be understood that it's directly to us, very much weighted out and measured out, and for us to be able to try to see those positive aspects, the silver linings that Hashem is saying, until here you need to suffer, but not beyond that. Everything is clearly laid out. And that's why what we learn from this, in summary in Source 10, second paragraph, Ein Adam Nokef Etzba, nobody has something happen to them down here, unless Ellen Kane Machruzim Alav Milamala, unless it's dictated and directed from above. And two, Hayisurim Anishlachim LaAdam Medudim B'Tikduk Atzum VeEin Adam Mekabel Yoter Mima Shemagilo Afilu K'Malom Neima, and no one gets beyond what they deserve. And that is why, when the Gemara in Source 11 tells us in Erechi that if a person puts their hand into their pocket in order to get out 3 coins, and instead he pulls out 2 coins. And now he's going to have to put his hand back in his pocket to get the 3rd coin. One should understand that this is also Yisuri. And one should also understand, Harei Lanu Shekol Prami Yisuri. Afilu Hakatan Biyoter. Hei B'mash Nogei L'Kamut V'Eina Nogei L'Echut. Ba'i Dei Psakdim Yuchavim Beitin Shamala. When we're talking about everything being tailor-made, it's not only in the Echut, in the major things in life, it's also in the small things. That if you put in your pocket to take out 3 coins and you get out 2 coins, that too is from Shamayim, that you would come out with 2 coins, not 3 coins, to necessitate putting your hand in your pocket again. All of this is measured out. And everything that happens to us, it's such a tremendous powerful insight into the Hashkocha Pratis, the tremendous love and detailed watching that Hashem has in our lives. There is another aspect that I'd like to speak about when we're talking about how Hashem measures out everything for every person. And that we look at this and we say, well, why is Hashem doing this? Answer number one is to teach us that Hashem is very careful about what a person deserves and gives them only that and not more. The second part of this is found in a Gevaldik Netziv. The Netziv per se, as Emek Dover Peirush, is really incredible learning, and he has some mamish jewels in it. This Netziv, I believe, is one of them, not very well known, but I think says worlds. And let's learn this Netziv as a second part, really, of the reason why the Torah is detailing this for us. He says, Hamasa'ot ktanot, when we're talking about these spices, they're very small. They're almost like medicinal sizes. Kiderech nosei samanei refuot, the Hayah efshar larkiv et adam al gmalim, vayazet tovah liyosef shemadu raglav mirosar velo yachol lelech. Normally, when they would carry kerosene and tar, it took up a lot of space, and there was no room for a person to walk. And we know, historically, that a lot of times prisoners were just attached by rope to the last camel in the caravan, and they had to walk all the way down to wherever they were going. Yosef HaTzadik had just suffered by being thrown into a pit. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you needed to suffer to be thrown into the pit. But his feet hurt him. That is to the extent you need to suffer. But you know what, Yosef HaTzadik? I'm going to have you come down in a dignified way. I'm not going to have you come down, even though I understand you're being sold as a slave. But being sold as a slave and being sold as a slave can be two different ways to be sold as a slave. One is in a very, very undignified manner, where you're being schlepped through the desert, you know, like an animal, God forbid. And the other is to sit like a person on the camels. And because they were so small and were able to fit into the sack, the packs, a saddle of the camel, Yosef HaTzadik, says the Netziv, was able to sit on his way down to Egypt. My friends, on this level, we see here a gevaldic insight about why the Torah details for us what they were carrying. And here the Torah is teaching us the concept of Kavod HaBrios, the concept that Hashem has sensitivity for the Kavod HaAdam, for who a human being is. And that brings us to that famous Chazal that says in Source 13 that Yaakov Avinu was supposed to go down with Shalshalot Shel Barzel. He's supposed to go down in chains to Egypt. But again, Hashem had mercy on Bnei Bechori, on his firstborn, on Yaakov Avinu. And he says, no. It's like the aspect, Mashal leparash ayu moshchim atal mokrim, v'lo haitanim shechet. It's like a cow who was being taken to the slaughterhouse, and she didn't want to go. So what did it do? What did they do? They took the child cow in front of it, the calf, and then the cow followed suit. Yaakov Avinu was supposed to go down in a very, very traumatic way to Egypt. Hashem said again, this is not part of Kavod HaBrios. Yes, for whatever reason, Golos has to happen. But let's focus in what every person deserves. Yaakov Avinu, like Yosef HaTzadik in this case, because of his great stature as a tzaddik, didn't deserve to go down as a slave in the Shalshalot Shel Barzel, in the chains. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, how will I bring you down? I'll have your son Yosef come down first. I'll have him have wagons from the Malchus, from the royalty, who are going to take you down, that you're going to go down in a more befitting way possible. And it's interesting, Sam Laderech, the Chevron Rosh Yeshiva, speaks about, there are a number of places in Chumash, in Tanakh, where you see this sensitivity, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has uncovered a brios, like we see in our case of having Yosef HaTzadik ride on a camel and not be schlepped along. One of the fascinating cases is found in source number 15 in Megillah Esther. The Masecha Megillah Miziag Mara Kama Tamim The Gemara gives a number of reasons why did Esther invite Haman to this Suda, to the party. So Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya says, Ulai yargish ha-makom, perhaps Hashem will feel, v'yaseh lanu neis, and Hashem will do a miracle. Rashi explains, what does it mean, perhaps Hashem will feel? So Rashi says, Ulai yargish ha-kadosh baruch hu, shani tzricha lachnif l'rasha v'zalzel b'chvodi, that I'm going to have to butter myself up, I'm going to have to flatter this Rasha, and it's going to be a zilzul, it's going to be a degradation on my kavod. So he says, Ma'amar zani flalibonein, can you imagine this? How special for Hashem is the Kod Ha'adam? Because here, Kla Yisrael don't have any merit. We know the Medrash tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu and the Avos HaKadoshim were davening. The Midas HaRachamim was trying to. The gates of mercy were closed and weren't able to change this Gezar Din. It was signed and sealed. But yet, Kvoda Shel Esther, which means the glory of Esther, because Etzem Gzeirat Haman HaRasha wasn't about Kavod, it was about Tov and Ra, it was a Malek against Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael deserved what was coming to them. But the fact that Esther would have to be Machni, flatter this Rasha of Haman, that was a zilzur on her Kavod. The Davar Ze Kokach Hashuv, this is so important. That was machriel lifnei amako. It was enough to be the deciding factor that changed the entire story into a schus, into a neis. And this is a sense of the sensitivity that Hashem has for the kavod, for the glory and honor of righteous people. And obviously, how much more so, how much honor and glory we need to have for each and every member of Klal Yisrael. And it's interesting, in the Kapitel Tehillim, Kaf Dalet, when David HaMelech says in Source 17, Mi Aleh Behar Hashem, who will go up on the mountain of Hashem, Umi Yakum Bimkom Kacho, and who will stand in this place? And he describes in the Ki Kapayim of Ar Levav, somebody who is of innocence, of clean heart, Asher Lo Nasa Lashav Nafshi, who has never carried in naught my soul. And obviously, the question becomes, why does he say, my soul, when he should have said, nafsho, his soul? But David HaMelech is teaching you, don't think that my soul is any different than your soul. When we're talking about great people, in real respect, everyone has the potential to be great. Ota ha-nefesh shel David HaMelech, nafshi, Zoya Nefesh Okla Yisrael. We are all inherently created B'Tselem Elohim. We all have the divine soul within us. And just like it behooves us, just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is sensitive to this Tselem Elohim, to this aspect of godliness, it behooves us likewise to be sensitive to the godliness in others. And that's why it's interesting in Source 18. When we speak about Rabbi Akiva's students, Shalom Nagu Kavod Zelazet, that did not treat each other with honor. It's fascinating that of those 24,000 students, we don't have any mention of them, of any statements they said in the Gemara. The five students that Rabbi Akiva had afterwards, the Gemara is filled with statements they made, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai being the most famous perhaps of them. But of those 24,000 students, no mention is made. Why? Because kavod avrios, to be nagu kavod zelazet, to be able to show honor to each other, is part and parcel what Judaism is about. It's a fundamental principle. And when you're lacking this, you're lacking everything. It's impossible to have a memra. It's impossible to have a statement of Torah from such a person. They're lacking what is key and crucial in their service of Hashem. And I think, my friends, this now becomes the first part of what this Rashi is teaching us. The matan scharam shel tzaddikim, the reward of righteous people. Until here they had to suffer, but not foul-smelling things. And two, the reward for the righteous is that God treated him with dignity, like Yaakov Avinu was treated with dignity, like Esther Malka was treated with dignity. That for these righteous people, God says, they're not deserving to go down in an undignified manner. And that is hinted at and how and what the Yishmaelites were carrying. But then we're left, my friends, with a second question. We're left with, that's very nice. We understand here, and it's a very powerful lesson of how careful Hashem is with each and every one of us to help us and guide us in order to do what we're put in this world to do. But do you really think that Yosef HaTzadik even noticed these smells? How are we to understand what the purpose was? And for this question, I'd like to take two approaches. The first approach is based on the Ma'anar Chaim Rav Masishyahu Salomon, where he notes in Source 20, based on Chovos HaLevavos, who is Magdir in Shar Bitachon, the beginning of Perak Aleph, the first chapter. Higdir Midat HaBitachon, the concept of Bitachon, which we call trust in Hashem. Shu Menuchas HaNefesh HaBoteach. It's really the inner tranquility of the one who has faith in Hashem. Vakavana ki ikara totza'a l'maseh shel bitachon hu shemenchil menucha l'lev haboteach. It gives a certain sense of serenity to the person who has this trust. Ki eino doeg u'meitzer matzavo klal. He's not concerned about his state of being. Rash rak mashlich al Hashem yavo. He casts on Hashem his burden. Veino notein l'ba'alav l'bilbul l'geshet el ha'olo. And he doesn't allow confusion and distortion to enter into his tent. You want to know a sure sign of someone who has bitachon? It's someone who's able to walk around with menuchas hanefesh, who can walk around with tranquility in all that is happening in life. They could have a zillion things going on around them, and it could be challenging things, and it could be painful things, and on their face is serenity, is tranquility, is asserting calmness. You may have met people like this. My normal reaction, maybe yours is too, is like you want to strangle these people. Like, how do you be so tranquil at this time? But you know, there's a lot to learn from these people. And it's for us to take a step back and to say, these things are going to pass. These things are going to work themselves through. But Bezrat Hashem, with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we need to step ourselves out of this picture and be able to see, Yashlech Hashem Yahavo. Yes, we have to do our Rishtadlos. There's no question about it. But there's some cases in life where it's beyond you to do anything. And then all you can do is step back and smell the roses. And that's exactly with Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik, when he's in the pit, he screams out to his brothers. The Torah tells us the Parsha Miketz. And the brothers don't listen. When he's in the pit, when there's something to be done, he does his ishtablos. He's screaming to his brothers, have mercy on me. But now that he's sold, now that he's part of this caravan as a slave, there's nothing that he can do now but trust that Hashem is leading him in the direction that he needs to be. And this is the idea that Yosef HaTzadik, even in such a situation, is able to appreciate what it smells like. And therefore, it says from Masechiyahu 21, Ki imat gishim kol kach hatova sha'asah lo Kadosh Baruch Hu. But that if the Torah is going to emphasize what the sweet-smelling spices were that the Ishmaelites were bringing down, Vaday dayaka mikabel atova, it must mean that there was someone there to appreciate it. Umachrachim lo mod misa, and we obviously learn from here. She Yosef atzadik haya bemet miyushav v'ragua. He was calm. He was serene. Ad kishaya haruach min hashevet, to the point that when the wind would blow and he would smell this smell, haya margish ba v'nene mimenu umod el Hashem, he would appreciate it. Thank you, Hashem, for giving me this sweet smelling stuff. And this would have been impossible if he did not have the menuchas hanefesh of haboteach b'Hashem be'emes, that one who really trusts in Hashem has. Lo hayakan lo dikaon v'lo atzvus lo bilbul v'lo bahala. There was no depression, there was no anxiety. Ela menucha shalom v'shalva hashkeif avetach, which is a chelek of the tzaddikim who walk with Hashem at all times. And you know what? Rav Masishyahu Salomon goes even further. He says, he says, Quoting a Chacham, Ki mi shehu atzuv umutag eino mesugal largish bitzavon hazulat. We see that Yosef HaTzadik, throughout his experiences, never loses his bitachon. Even when he is in that terrible Sora jail for 12 years. How do we see this? One day, the Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Ofim look down, they look depressed, and Yosef HaTzadik says to them, what's wrong? What's going on today? Right? And as the Malin points out today, normally, Madu Pnechem Ra'im Hayom, why your faces look so down today? And again, if a person is themselves in a despondent and depressive state, you are unable to feel the pain and sadness of somebody else. This clearly shows us that Yosef HaTzadik, even in prison, who is able to be sensitive enough to the feelings of the Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Ofim when they were down, means that he was always on a level of this Menuchas HaNefesh. The way I tell my students, based on Rav Nachman of Breslov, that everyone has to have a nigun, everyone has to have a soul. And I sing it a lot in the middle of teaching. Obviously, I'm constrained on a video, not knowing who my audience is to be able to teach this way. But everyone needs to have a nigun. And I say to my students, when you go through challenges in life, sing a nigun. Reconnect, because we know that the Shar of Shira, the gate of song, is one of the deepest gates of our souls. Recognize that Hashem is running the show. That was Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik reached this level, Ki ayar margil atzmo, lazkir shem shamayim, v'lodot l'Hashem b'fiv tamid. V'zeh kiyem batzmo tamid tilato b'fiv. Yosef HaTzadik was somebody who had Shem Shamayim Shagur Befi. He always was asking for Hashem's help. He always thanked Hashem. He was always somebody who was walking hand in hand with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. It was such a person who then was able to have this Menuchas HaNefesh, who was able to have this tranquility. And this is something that Rav Arush speaks about in 24 in the Garden of Emunah. Sorrow, hardship, and deprivation are perfect loving kindnesses when they are the agents that bring about one's tikkun and one's correction. When we accept life's difficulties with emunah calmly and happily, knowing that Hashem is doing everything to help us achieve the loftiest of aspiration, we become candidates for eternal happiness and inner peace in this world and in the next. This is the idea that Yosef HaTzadik understood. He understood that each and every part of himself was in order to be coming to a higher level of tikkun. He ascribed everything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And actually continuing, Rav Arush is prepared to implement grueling demands from a seemingly merciless coach. Not only that, but athlete usually loves and respects his or her coach. Why? Because the athlete knows the coach and trusts that the coach wants to build him or her into a winner and champion. We should have the same knowledge of and trust of Hashem. So then we go through obstacles in life, we go through hindrances in life, understand that they are personal gifts from Hashem. So the first level, did Yosef HaTzadik appreciate it? The answer is emphatically yes. Mm-hmm. What do we learn from this? We learn the level of bitachon. We learn the level that we need to work toward of having this tranquility, of having this faith, of having this ability of serenity, of recognizing that Hashem does what is best for us. And we need to work hand in hand with the Kaddish Baruch Hu in our lives. We need to recognize that whatever happens to us is being directed from Hashem. Shem Shamayim Shagur Befi. It's about a relationship with Hashem. It's about bringing Hashem into the picture, of asking Hashem for help, thanking Hashem when things happen, for both the good as well as the challenging, and then recognize that everything is being tailor-made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'd like to take a look at one final approach. If we saw two approaches on the first level, of that everything is tailor-made by Hashem, that there's a kavod habrios going on here, a real sensitivity to the human being. And on the second level, we've seen the first part of the bitachon, of the faith of Yosef HaTzadik. Let's round out the picture with one final idea that I'd like to analyze. Again, with a bit in depth because it's so fundamental, and again, it deserves its own treatment, Rav Belsky, Einei Yisrael. To understand the message of the fragrant spices, Source 26, on a deeper level, we must analyze the role suffering plays in our lives. The beginning of a painful experience may signal the onset of a series of setbacks and failures that will eventually destroy a person. At other times, however, may simply be the beginning of a process that brings a person to a greater level of perfection. In and of itself, the suffering is not without merit. Suffering is also a gateway to growth, to acquire a new level of perfection. One must firstly rid himself of his imperfections. This process is often painful. All such change involves uprooting and destroying what was previously established. Even though a particular character flaw may be very harmful to a person, it is nevertheless deeply embedded in his personality. A person associates himself with his midos, his personal attributes, both the good as well as the bad. In the process of acquiring a good midah, the bad midah must necessarily be expunged from within, a process that may cause much pain and anguish, which is very much akin to surgery. The purposeful act of destruction for constructive purpose is clearly expressed in Hilchos Shabbos, that the idea of how many sin offerings one brings is dependent on what you are making. Many of the processes in 28 in the manufacture of these items are essentially destructive, such as making a basket, making a barrel, making a clay oven. One has to grind, pounding the raw materials. A prime example of this category of labor is soter amanas livno, demolition for the sake of construction. The act of tearing down a structure for the purpose of building another one in its place is the very beginning of the constructive process. And that's why just for destroying, there is this aspect with the mind to build the one's chayav. The person who does so is liable. So we see the cycle of growth and development begins with destruction. Childbirth is another example of how intense pain precedes what is probably the most beautiful and meaningful event of a human existence, bringing into the world the precious new life. And likewise, we have what we call the birth pangs of Mashiach, where Klal Yisrael has endured and is currently enduring untold suffering and degradation. Yet Chazal tell us this is only the prelude to an unimaginable eternity of joy and peace. We have to understand these, as in cases of transformation, it involves some agonizing experience. We're going through now the Chevle Mashiach, the birth pangs of Mashiach, and they're difficult and they're painful. But we understand that it's destroying in order to build. We understand it's expunging that which is negative in order to be left with that which is positive. And this is why we can't explain, but this is the way the world works. It's through going through that process, as difficult as it is, that we come out much better and much stronger. And again, as we've noted, our purpose in this world is not just to keep mitzvot. It's in order to be able to do our special job in this world. And we need to always be kept focused in on this. In my mind, one of the most powerful books, I really would call it a sefer, that I've read in recent times, is a sefer by Rabbi Shaul Rosenblatt, Finding Light in the Darkness, subtitled The Toughest Challenges and How to Grow from Them, a Targum Press book. It's about Rabbi Rosenblatt, who lost his wife at the age of 30, battling cancer for 4 years, Alana, and going through this experience, and he describes how one can grow through painful experience. And I'd like to take some of his excerpts, because I think that they are coming from a place of one who has tremendous understanding and unfortunate experience to really be a guide and model for us. He said in 30, Alana, who was his first wife, and I made a decision when she first became ill. We didn't have a choice as to whether or not she would have cancer, but we did have a choice as to how we would respond to that cancer. We knew that we could allow ourselves to despair, that we could hide ourselves away from the world and accept our fate, or we could decide to be happy with the goodness that we had. We could make sure we enjoyed our time with each other and our children, enjoyed our lives in general. The Mishnah tells us that Avram was tested with 10 tests. to show how much God loved him. At first glance, this seems strange. Here's how you show you love someone. Firstly, you throw him into a furnace. Then you tell him to pack his bags and move to a foreign country. Then you tell him to pack his... Then, when he obeys, you bring a famine into his country. And then when he travels to find food, you have a ruler of the next place abduct his wife. And it goes on and on. Upon his return, having overcome the greatest challenge of his life, of the Akedah, he finds that his wife has died and is forced to pay an exorbitant amount for an inferior burial plot in the land that God has supposedly promised him as an inheritance. And all this shows God's love for Abraham? Yes, this is precisely God's love. Because through these challenges, Abraham was able in 31 to come closer to Hashem. He fulfilled his potential and became the greatest human we know of, founder of the nation that has taught monotheism to most of the world. The pain was short-lived. The results were eternal. Abraham sits in his place in eternity, not in spite of his pain, but because of it. His pain is gone. His greatness remains forever. And so I ask you to ask yourself and be brutally honest in 32, what are you in this world for? To be comfortable? To avoid pain? To live out 70 or 80 years of life with the least challenge possible? Is this your aim? Then many quote-unquote bad things will happen along the way, because this world is a world of pain, and pain is antithetical to all that you are living for. If, however, you believe, as I do, that we're here to lift ourselves into godliness, to grow and to ultimately attain self-perfection, then all that happens to us is a golden opportunity. And the more challenging it is, the greater that opportunity. The Mishnah tells us, according to the pain is the reward, not the effort, the pain. The rabbis take this to its illogical extreme. They say, if someone has nothing painful happen to him for 40 days, he should worry greatly. They say perhaps he's acquired his world. This means Hashem is no longer testing him, no longer giving him the opportunity to grow. Hashem has given up on him ever becoming anything more than he is right now, and has simply chosen to let him live out his days in the world without attaining deeper levels of perfection. A life free from difficulty is not something to interest us as Jews. Painful as they may be, we do actually want the challenges that will help us achieve our potential. And he describes life, as we've been speaking about, as a large play, where we're charged with the mission of using our free will and lifting ourselves closer to God. Circumstances may be fluid, but challenge is a constant, that the purpose behind all events in life. He says, my friend, take it from me, pain passes. All pain passes. If not in this world, then certainly in the next. But no pain will carry through the world of truth. It is decisions we make. The way we choose to face that challenge and overcome that pain will to remain with us for eternity. These decisions, and these decisions alone, are the purpose of our years in this world. And he notes in 35, I think the distinction between pain and suffering is as follows. If we are able to find meaning in pain, then we do not suffer. If we are unable to find meaning in pain, then it becomes overwhelming, and we call that feeling of being overwhelmed suffering. And he says, for example, when a child cuts themselves. So what does the child do? The child goes over to the parent and asks for, you know, the parent kisses the boo-boo, whatever it is. Why then is a child able to, you know, dance on its merry way? It's not that the pain that goes. The child still has that paper cut or still has that boo-boo, right? You put medicine on it. It's a suffering. You have given the child a meaningful context for the pain, the context of a parent's love. The child still feels the pain, but with a newfound context for it, he no longer suffers. An adult must find his own meaning in his pain. But when he or she can look at the pain as a means to grow, a means to develop a deeper self-understanding, then the pain remains, but the suffering will be forgotten. The point remains the same. Circumstances are neutral. We and we alone make the choice of whether they be good or bad. So when we're talking here about our story of Yosef HaTzadik, we're talking here about Yosef HaTzadik being brought down, and he is being brought down into this experience in order to go through a traumatic event in his life. And Yosef HaTzadik is clearly suffering in this event. But we have to understand that it is for a larger purpose. And that larger purpose, and this is 38, with this in mind, the spices that accompanied Yosef on his journey were not sent for his physical comfort, but were rather an assurance there would be a positive and beneficial outcome to his sufferings. Yosef had experienced visionary dreams revealing to him the glorious future of his family and people. He had no doubt to the truth of these visions, but he was afraid, Shema Yigrom Achrei, perhaps he did something not to deserve them. To reassure him that he would eventually merit the full realization of his dreams, Hashem sent the caravan laden with spices as a sure sign, a siman baduk, that the entire process he was experienced would lead to their fulfillment. The sweet fragrance of the spices that accompanied Yosef on his way was a subtle yet undeniable indication that Hashem would be with him through all of his sufferings. And this would give Yosef the strength to persevere. What Yosef HaTzadik needed was the context for his suffering. He needed to be able to see that there's a larger picture out there. And that's exactly what the sweet-smelling spices did. It gave Yosef HaTzadik the understanding that ultimately he would be successful. It gave Yosef HaTzadik the understanding that all of this is part of a greater plan. And that is what Rabbi Rosenblatt is saying. When we, on some level, whether we understand what the greater plan is or not, in this world or in the next, but when we understand that there is a greater plan, that there is a larger picture, that enables us to go through whatever it is that we go through, and allows it to become so much easier for us. And this, he says, was likewise by Yehuda, also in Parsha Vayesha, who had to go through this difficult experience with Tamar, because that would make him into a melech. A king has to be someone who really understands the people. A king in 40, whose life has been a model of righteousness in the asterisk, will not possess such an intimate understanding of the common people. On the contrary, his sense of self-righteousness and natural superiority may cause him to impose his will on the people in such a way that will foster resentment and rebellion. But when a king has a box of worms dangling from behind him, there's something shameful in his past. He'll check any potential arrogance and foster tolerance for the shortcomings of others. That, my friends, is why Yehuda has to go through the challenges in order to be a melech, and Yosef HaTzadik also going through the challenges in his leadership capacity. But Hashem is clearly telling him, the sweet-smelling spices is almost a gift from above, saying, Yosef, there's a context for your suffering. I want you to understand that I am with you. I want you to understand that things are not for naught. And it's almost as if the Torah is telling us to take the model of Yosef HaTzadik and apply it to our lives. That we have to find those silver linings, those sweet-smelling spices and things that happen in our lives to be able to see Hashem's way of telling us there's a context, there's a purpose, there's a meaning. And the same is true in 42 of one's personal growth. Without sound foundations and appropriate surroundings, the fineness of edifices will always be unstable and out of place, and therefore be unable to fulfill the function for which it was constructed. We have to, in each and every one of our lives, have foundations that are properly established. And this means to dig down and uproot all the dirt and garbage, demolish the hovels of his mind, where dwell his baser instincts and unworthy aspirations, and then build his spiritual edifice in a place where its beauty can be of true benefit to all. The digging and uprooting may well cause great pain and inconvenience, but it's the only way. Indeed, Rashi may have also alluded to this when he said that Hashem sent him the sweet-smelling spices. The spices served as a reminder that his trials and suffering were only a necessary preparation for the divinely orchestrated plan. The painful experiences toward that end would serve the purpose of rooting out Joseph's deficiencies so that the positive outcome would be shalem, free of imperfection. And that was a deeper message that Yosef HaTzadik is being told here. You're going through this suffering, being thrown into a pit, being sold by your brothers, it's all part of rooting out whatever quality traits Yosef HaTzadik had to work on. But the sweet-smelling spices are saying it's worth it all. It's worth all the suffering and all the difficulties you're going through. Because ultimately, on one level, as we've seen, you will be king. There is a purpose to everything. On the second level, which is really the same level, you are just moving towards a higher level in who and what you are. And therefore, these things, these sufferings, these challenges, are just a prerequisite for the higher level. My friend, as Lahavin Olhaskiel, Rav Reitz, points out in source number 44 by the asterisk, he says, Gadluto shel Adam, the greatness of a person, nimdedet, is measured, biyocholto, in his ability to measure limdod varim b'perspektiva rechava, in a large perspective. Meidach soro samuchim v'adad hi mekor kol sfeikos v'gam im kol chatat. Life, we have to be able to see the perspective of the larger picture. And this is true on the personal as well as on the national level. Klal Yisrael, even when they've had terrible things happen to them, are able to maintain their strength and their inner dignity because they understand that it's part of a larger process leading to an end. We understand fundamentally that this world has Hashgacha Pratis, as we began with. It has a sense of purpose. It has a sense of divine design where each one of us is placed there for a specific purpose. And when I understand that, I understand that the challenges are tailor-made for me to grow, for me to be able to be the best me on the individual as well as national level. The challenge is not to get caught up in the here and now and in the pain of the here and now, but to be able to make those decisions and say, it's up to me to decide how I'm going to respond and relate to what is going on. The choices are in my hand. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. That's the challenge that we have. And this is a deeper meaning that's brought down in the Siftei Chaim, where he says in the Aaron 47 that Hashem is Yotzeor Uvarech Hoshech. Hashem is the one who creates light and creates darkness. Osa Shalom creates peace, Uvareh Takol, and creates everything, which is the beginning of Birkas Kriyat Shema. But it's interesting, the Pasuk in Yeshaya, which is taken from, ends the Pasuk Uvareh Ra, and God creates evil. Why do our rabbis change it? Uvareh Takol creates everything. When it's Vareh Ra, God creates evil. They're really not changing it, they're explaining it. Evil cannot be understood in its absolute own right. It has to be understood in the context of kol, of the entirety. And that's why the Shabbos Davening, he notes in 49, it's hakol yaducha, hakol yishabchucha, hakol yomru, hakol, 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 everything is about hakol. Because when we see things in the perspective of hakol, of everything, which is the perspective of Shabbos, and Shabbos is main olam haba, it's the sense of the future world, where we have the correct perspective, where everything fits into a place, then we understand uvore ra creates evil, is really uvore et hakol, that God creates everything. And our challenge is not to lose the perspective. Our challenge is to be able to sit in the place of Yosef HaTzadik and be able to see, as he's being torn from his family, that this is being tailor-made by God, that God has a sensitivity of Kavod HaBrios, of putting him on the camel, that Yosef HaTzadik has a tranquility and the serenity to be able to appreciate that there's nothing more he can do now but leave it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He can appreciate the sweet-smelling spices. And he also recognizes that these spices are a sign, a siman baduk from Shemayim, that Yosef, you need to go through these challenges, but there is a goal at the end. There is the sweet-smelling spices at the end of the road. And that's the message for us in life. Everything is tailor-made. The sensitivity that Hashem has for us, the sensitivity we need to have for others, created B'Tselem Elohim, how we need to have that type of inner serenity and to recognize that what we go through in life is in order to ultimately give us a tikkun, give us a rectification, and we need to see life in this perspective. I'd like to close with a story that illustrates this point that Rabbi Rosenblatt notes in his book. I think it's one that's familiar, but I think that it is well worth mentioning here. A couple once took an anniversary trip to England and were shopping in a shop of beautiful things. They both liked antique cups, antiques and pottery, and especially teacups. Spotting an exceptional cup, the woman said, "May we see that? It's so beautiful." As the lady handed the teacup to them, suddenly began to speak. "You don't understand. I have not always been a teacup. There was a time when I was just a lump of red clay. My master took me and rolled me and pounded me over and over, and I yelled out, 'Don't do that, I don't like it, leave me alone.' But he only smiled and said, 'Not yet.' Then wham! I was placed on a spinning wheel and spun around and around. 'Stop it, I'm getting dizzy, I'm going to be sick,' I screamed. But the master only nodded and said quietly, 'Not yet.' He spun me and poked me and prodded and bent me out of shape to suit himself, and then he put me in heaven and never felt such heat. I yelled and knocked and pounded that door, 'Help, get me out of here.' I can see him through the glass door, and I could read his lips as he shook his head from side to side. Not yet. When I thought I couldn't bear it another minute, he opened the door carefully, took me out, and put me on a shelf, where I began to cool. Oh, that felt so good. This is much better, I thought. But after I cooled off, he picked me up and brushed me with the paint and painted me all over. The fumes were horrible. I thought I would gag. Oh, please, stop it, stop it. I cried. He only shook his head and said, not yet. Then suddenly he put me back in the oven. Only it was not like the first one. This one was twice as hot. And I just knew I would suffocate. I begged, I pleaded, I screamed, I cried. I was convinced I would never make it. I was ready to give up. Just then the drawer opened and he took me out again and placed me on the shelf, where I cooled off and waited, wondering what's coming next. Just then, then he handed me over to a mirror and said, look at yourself. And I did. That's not me, I said. That couldn't be me. It's beautiful. I'm beautiful. And then he spoke. I know it hurt to be rolled and pounded and patted, but I had left you alone, you would have dried up. I know it made you dizzy to spin around on the wheel, but if I'd stopped, you would have crumbled. I know it was hot and you suffered terribly in the oven, but if I hadn't put you there, you would have cracked. I know the fumes were bad when I painted you, but if I hadn't done that, you never would have hardened. You never would have any color in your life. And if I hadn't put you in that second oven, you wouldn't have survived for long, because your hardness would not have held. Now you are a finished product. Now you are what I had in mind when I first began with you. God is the potter, and we are his clay. That's what we say, Kippur Ne'ilah. He will mold us and make us and expose us to just enough pressures of just the right kinds that we become a flawless piece of work to fulfill his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So when life seems hard and you are being pounded and pushed beyond endurance, when your world seems to be spinning out of control, when you feel you're in a fiery furnace of trials, when life seems to quote-unquote stink of awful fumes, try this. Brew a cup of your favorite tea in your prettiest teacup. Then sit down and think of the story and have a little talk with the potter.